one of the big announcements and developments for buildings at COP28 was the launch of the Buildings Breakthrough. This is part of what's called the Breakthrough Agenda, which is a formal program initiated under COP several years ago. It's led by France, and the US was one of, I think, over 23 countries that joined. And what this essentially will do is have these countries cooperating on how to operationalize a vision that all buildings are net zero and resilient by 2030.
Buildings and construction account for 40% of global carbon emissions. So it's no surprise that real estate was a key topic for discussions and resolutions at COP28 UAE in Dubai. In this episode, you'll hear key takeaways from the two-week climate conference, which, with 70,000 registrants from around the world, was the largest COP to date and maybe the most dramatic. Welcome back to Sustainability Street, our podcast on the intersection of commercial real estate and the world we live in. I'm your host, Therese Fitzgerald. My guest on the program is Liz Beardsley, Senior Policy Counsel at the USGBC. Liz attended the conference and participated in a number of panels. Hi, Liz, and welcome back to Sustainability Street.
Thanks, Therese. It's great to join you.
And welcome home after your journey to COP28 in Dubai.
Thank you. It was quite an experience, and I'm also happy to be home.
Yes, you must be tired. I've been following your LinkedIn posts, and it seems like it was a very exciting and very busy 2 weeks.
Really was. We had our CEO and president, Peter Templeton, came, as well as our chief product officer, Sarah Zaleski, and several other staff, Hilary Varnador and Deep D, his local. And it was great to have a larger delegation this year. And just everyone was out there doing their part to engage and talk about our messages around the COP.
I'd say the biggest news that came out of COP28 was its conclusion with countries agreeing to phase out fossil fuels. And I think that was something that was in doubt throughout the conference and even delayed its ending. Can we start by talking about that a little bit?
Absolutely. And actually, there was just a lot of drama the last several days of COP because an initial draft text had come out that drew a lot of criticism. And so people were rallying. We were issuing statements as well, calling for a strong outcome. We were involved with a particular group that was working towards specifically having the text recognize the need for a doubling of energy efficiency, and that ended up in there. On the fossil fuel issue, it's remarkable, but no COP outcome document has ever used the words fossil fuel until this year.
Wow.
Last year in Glasgow, there was attempts to call for fossil fuel phase out or unabated fossil fuel phase down. So there was just a lot of different variations that were debated, and several countries were pushing back, and those weren't agreed in the past. In this COP, they ended up calling for accelerated efforts towards net zero emission energy systems and transitioning away from fossil fuels. So they did not call for a phase out or phase down, but again, use that language. And there's more positive language about tripling renewable energy capacity, which of course will replace between efficiency and renewable. That will be what gets countries off of fossil fuels.
So I thought it had called for a phase out of fossil fuels. So it did not?
Not precisely in that language, but again, it is remarkable that this is the first time it has been acknowledged in this consensus document that fossil fuels needs to be transitioned away from. So there's some more precision in this section of the what's being called the UAE consensus. As I mentioned, the tripling renewable energy and doubling the rate of energy efficiency improvements, but also accelerating efforts to the phase down of unabated coal power, accelerating efforts globally toward net zero emission energy systems, transitioning away from fossil fuels in energy systems, and some other provisions as well. The phasing out language is for inefficient fossil fuel subsidies that do not address energy poverty or just transitions as soon as possible. This is really new terrain for the COP outcome document. Not as far as some people wanted, which was an absolute call for phasing out a fossil fuel, but definitely a signal of where things are headed.
Do you expect the UAE consensus to be as historic as the Paris Accord was?
I don't think I'd say that. The UAE consensus, like the Sharm el-Sheikh outcome and the Glasgow principles, I think they were called, you know, each COP builds on the last and takes things further. So there's elements here that are historic. And what will really happen next is the countries are being directed to work on their next nationally determined contributions. So what, you know, their commitments to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, that will occur in 2 years, and that will potentially be historic if we can make progress. So yeah, in one sense, each COP shows what we're doing and what countries are willing to do. And so in that sense, it's historic. But I think the Paris Agreement was a real breakthrough. And what happened there, just for everyone's background, until then, there had been this idea of really like top-down, systematic greenhouse gas reductions that were going to be imposed on each country. Until the parties came up with the idea going into Paris that, you know what, we're going to put our target on global warming and then let each country say what it can bring to the table. And we're going to at least get started. And so that happened. So that was what enabled the Paris Agreement. And that was transformational versus a sort of top-down approach.
And then another part of the consensus that you mentioned was to triple renewables by 2030. Is there a real sense that that's achievable given current economic situations and challenges with converting grids and making wind energy widespread?
Yeah, good question. There is a sense that it's achievable globally. Again, this is by 2030, and there's still the opportunity for some countries who do not have electricity service throughout the country and are seeking it, you know, to hopscotch over conventional, you know, fossil technologies and go right to renewable energy. And, you know, we've certainly seen in the US that renewable energy is now very cost competitive with gas and oil facilities, even at the utility scale. In the last several years, renewable energy deployment has outpaced conventional approaches. So I think it's happening, and we'll see. I think one of the other issues at the COP, of course, has been finance to do these things and supporting transitions in developing countries. So there were also some breakthroughs in that front, although certainly more finance is needed.
And last year, we talked about how there was a real buzz about the U.S. Biden spoke and the Inflation Reduction Act had just been passed. How was the U.S. received at COP28?
Pretty similar. There is still significant participation by the Biden administration across the board. We were really pleased to have Andrew Myek, the Federal Chief Sustainability Officer, at one of our events, and the CEQ chair, Brenda Mallory, at another event. And, you know, they're talking about all of the things that are happening in the Biden administration, the policies and the IRA. I think there are over 30 members of Congress there for several days as well. So there's definitely been a big emphasis to show that we are here, we are engaged, we're working with partners around the world, we, the U.S. government, that is, to try to support this transition, bring our technical knowledge, and participate in some big projects.
Now let's talk about what was happening in the Buildings Pavilion. The theme of the conference was Global Stock Take. This was billed as kind of an inventory of progress since the Paris Accord was signed. What was the consensus about progress in the built environment?
Clearly, those that are there at COP from the building sector are there because we have solutions. And our big message, I think collectively, is that the technology is readily available. These things are cost effective for the most part, and we know how to do this. So sector wide, we know that we need to do better, and we are behind. We're behind some of the other sectors. So there was really a focus on scaling the solutions that we already have, doing that through policy, through finance, through technical assistance. One of the big announcements and developments for buildings at COP28 was the launch of the Buildings Breakthrough. This is part of what's called the Breakthrough Agenda, which is a formal program initiated under COP several years ago. It's led by France, and the US was one of, I think, over 23 countries that joined. And what this essentially will do is have these countries cooperating on how to operationalize a vision that all buildings are net zero and resilient by 2030. So very ambitious, focused on collaboration. You know, we know that in the US, the federal government has done a lot with its own portfolio at GSA, at DOD, other agencies are working really hard to continue the progress they've already made on sustainability and to further decarbonize and scale that work, as well as through many programs such as those at HUD and Department of Energy. So the U.S. has a lot to share with other countries, and we think this will help create opportunity for strong policies, for demonstration programs to really improve buildings globally. The Buildings Breakthrough also has the opportunity for the private sector to create initiatives. The International Code Council has created an initiative for resilient and sustainable buildings capacity that we have joined. So USGBC will be participating in that. The next big milestone for this Buildings Breakthrough and initiative will be in March, when France will host a global summit on buildings and construction. And that will help set the agenda for this Buildings Breakthrough and the activities it will undertake. So a lot happening in that front.
And I understand there was a Buildings Progress Report released at the conference.
Yeah, and USGBC worked with AirUp to create a new report, The State of Decarbonization, U.S. Commercial Buildings. This is available free on our website. It's a data-centered report with extensive graphics that show just where we are in terms of the trajectory for buildings. There's some great information in there, for example, looking at how many real estate investment trusts that are primarily commercial buildings have science-based targets. It also shows that absolute operational emissions from U.S. commercial buildings have stabilized. So even though there's been huge growth in the volume of square footage, the absolute emissions are stable because of improved energy intensity. So that's an important metric. It also, you know, it's the first time we know that's tracking the extent of renovation. It shows there is a steady rate of renovation, but more of it needs to be deep energy retrofits as part of it. And that provides an opportunity for significant reduction in greenhouse gas emissions from the sector.
Wow, it's good to hear that progress on emissions and renovations. You participated in some panels, including one called Building Sustainability Assessment Tools, Critical Ingredient to Decarbonize the Built Environment. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, this one was sponsored by the Global Cement and Concrete Association. And of course, they are working to, with their members, to create net zero roadmaps for the cement and concrete industry. And this is an area that is getting a lot of increased and overdue attention in the last several years. In the US, we have GSA and EPA looking at standards for lower carbon concrete, and that's a great development. And there are many, many innovative technologies that are being deployed, demonstrated, and some still in the research phase. But if you look globally, there are many, many new buildings still to be built in Asia to accommodate increased population and economic growth. And that really provides opportunity. If we can create a technology that allows concrete to be carbon binding, then that really changes the outlook if we can make those buildings carbon positive potentially. So this event was really interesting. We were talking about different green building rating systems and how they relate to embodied carbon, you know, what their role is in terms of educating the design community, helping, you know, the whole industry in different markets learn what it means and how to build green buildings. And that includes this increased emphasis on embodied carbon.
Absolutely. What were some of the other key real estate topics and resolutions?
Yeah, well, I mentioned already that this doubling of efficiency was really key. And so there were several events around that. We had a couple events to launch our report, which are recorded. They're available to view. So I'll be happy to share those. One was at the Buildings Pavilion and first featured our CEO, Peter Templeton, highlighting the report. And then had some global organizations talking about how some of the themes of the report, for example, showing that while there is decarbonization progress, it's very uneven geographically and socioeconomically, and that really resonated with some of the global organizations. And they talked a bit about their work. And then it also featured Department of Defense and mayors from two cities talking about things that they are doing to decarbonize in their cities and the DoD. So that was a great one. And then the next day we had our roundtable with commercial real estate leaders from JLL, Lendlease, and Carrier. So that was a good one. And again, it's worth listening to. The other thing I wanted to highlight is the U.S. also joined the Global Cooling Pledge to reduce cooling-related emissions and increasing access. So over 60 countries have signed that pledge. And that's one where, again, there's just a huge opportunity with increased heat and demand from in other countries for cooling that don't have it now. And trying to create a better technology option for that to make sure that doesn't increase emissions, but could actually bring it down.
Yes, excessive heat really is a global issue now. Liz, this has been great. One last question. I know you encountered a lot of people from a lot of different countries, heard a lot of different things. What were some of the things that other countries are doing that the U.S. might want to learn from or emulate?
One thing that really stood out to me at this COP was its expressed inclusion of a number of related sustainable development goals. For example, this is the first time that health has been on the formal agenda, which is remarkable because there is such a strong nexus with climate change and health. Also, food and its both emissions as a problem, but also how it's the food supply will be impacted by global warming. So that was also newly part of the COP. So this more holistic approach really struck me. And I think that the U.S. is on board and has been looking at things this way for a while. And certainly USGBC always takes a holistic approach and looks at how things are interconnected. Yeah, so I think this is a good sign for trying to solve multiple problems as we're addressing climate change. There's such huge equity issues, there's food supply, there's security, and these are all connected, and we have the opportunity to be mindful and intentional and create some new solutions.
Great. Well, thanks, Liz, so much. Thanks for bringing all that back to us.
Thanks for having me, Therese.
Thank you for joining me on Sustainability Street. If you have any questions about this episode or suggestions for future episodes, feel free to reach out to me at therese.fitzgerald@cpe-mhn.com. Bye for now.